Hello and welcome once again to the Pinsent Masons podcast, where we try to keep you abreast of the most important developments in global business law every second Tuesday. Today, we'll look at the impact of a wide-ranging new EU directive that demands that companies assess and reduce their damaging impact on the environment and human rights, and find out that it affects many more companies than you might think. And we examine the UK's new law governing self-driving cars and ask, will it set the standard for the rest of the world? But first, some business law news from around the world. EU AI Act passes last legislative hurdle. New Hong Kong law will affect how construction companies are paid. And the UK enters the pre-election period. European Union ministers have approved the EU's Artificial Intelligence Act, which will now become law within weeks, but may not take effect for 2 years. The AI law is wide-ranging and governs how EU countries should regulate and control the use of AI systems based on their level of risk, including banning some uses of the technology. It also seeks to control the development of the systems so that users are clear about the nature of the technology they're using and the data underpinning it. A proposed new law in the Hong Kong Special Administrative Region will make construction companies pay their suppliers even if they haven't themselves been paid yet, preventing the use of pay-when-paid clauses in contracts. The bill, which will be read by the Legislative Council this week, aims to increase the speed of payments and put in place new mechanisms to resolve disputes. Construction law expert Bernard Ang said that the bill would truly change the construction contracting landscape and will require wholesale amendments to construction contracts and lead to a reallocation of risks in many instances. A general election has been called in the UK, meaning that relations between companies and the government will change in the run-up to the vote on the 4th of July. During the pre-election period, the government will avoid major decisions. Though companies are not directly affected by the rules, it could have an impact on some of their activities. Public law expert David Thornelow explained.
What government departments can't do is take major decisions that are not time sensitive, things that essentially could wait for 6 weeks until after the election. These may be matters that a new government or the same government might take a different view on after the election. So whilst those rules don't apply directly to businesses, if businesses are engaging with public bodies or government departments, they may find that they are limited in what they can do because of that guidance. It may be a major contract that is quite business as usual and is not politically sensitive. That might go ahead. But if it is something that has a little bit more sensitivity or it's a major public spending decision, then there is a good chance that those decisions will simply be deferred until the election has run its course.
A major piece of legislation was passed in the European Parliament last month that will have far-reaching implications for the way all large companies in the EU conduct themselves, and will have knock-on effects on smaller companies and those outside the EU. The Corporate Sustainability Due Diligence Directive, or CSDDD, creates an obligation on large companies to make sure their own activities and those of their suppliers don't harm the environment or breach people's human rights. It's wide in scope, broad in its reach, and comprehensive in the impact it will have on businesses. Birmingham-based commercial and supply chain specialist Laura Eyre told me why the law is being introduced.
Its main focus is essentially to require large companies, EU companies, to identify, minimise and essentially prevent, wherever possible, potential environmental and human rights damage or harm caused by their own activities, as well as those of their subsidiaries and their what they call their value chain partners. So for you or I, that's your supply chain, whether that's your supply chain upstream or supply chain downstream. And what they're then looking to do is make sure that those companies have really robust sustainability processes in place and comply with rigorous due diligence requirements.
The law will apply to large companies, those with over 1,000 employees and global turnover of 450 million euros or more. But the way it's been created means that its power will be felt across the global economy, because companies must make sure that other companies they hire don't breach the laws. Its effect will then stretch to smaller companies and to those not based in the EU at all.
I think it's really important to understand that even if you're not a company that's based in the EU and you don't meet the minimum requirements of the number of employees or the turnover, I think it's fair to say that the extent to which any of those companies that are directly caught fall within your supply chain, for example, you actually want to supply to some of these businesses to be caught, I think it's very fair to assume that they will seek to flow down all of these requirements to you as one of their suppliers, and therefore it's critical that businesses, whether based within the EU or in the UK, are fully on board with what the requirements are to ensure you give yourselves the best chance to be successful in tender processes, etc., and provide your supply chain with the confidence that you have the correct sustainability and due diligence processes in place yourself.
The law is designed to make sure companies are behaving with respect for people and places, which to some extent you hope is happening anyway. But even for those already operating in line with best practices, change is coming.
You would hope that businesses are simply implementing best practice, but what they will need to do is have evidence of the scrutiny they've carried out in their due diligence. They will need to ensure that their policies around environmental impacts and human rights impacts are very clear and updated very frequently. They'll need to ensure that their contracts and their tendering processes are aligned with this directive so that they can evidence that they have taken all the steps required of them, and they can document that and show to the supervising authorities that they have complied with the directive. I think this will entail a lot more data management and making sure that they have really robust procedures in place that are auditable and that are transparent.
The rules will probably take effect in the middle of 2029. So what should companies be doing now to prepare for these changes?
So whilst the implementation dates are still some way off, we are advising clients to ensure that they get their heads around this now, they understand whether they are actually in scope to start with, and they understand the implications of the directive in some more detail. This is more on the ground, procurement teams, legal teams, making sure that the suppliers that they are using are fully robust. And this is very specific in the context of looking at human rights issues, environmental issues, and ensuring that your business processes are set up to deal with that, to ensure you, wherever possible, prevent these issues, but obviously in the first place, identify and seek to minimise them. And that can be done then through ensuring that you have your policies in place, your transition plans in place, and also ensuring you have the right level of resourcing, because I think it's fair to say that there'll be a big requirement for businesses to make sure they have the resources available to comply. This is not a quick fix overnight.
The impact will not be felt evenly. Laura thinks that vehicle makers and people making consumer goods and food will feel the greatest effect. But for those worried about the scale of change, there is some good news. Doing this now will help meet other future regulatory obligations.
I think a lot of businesses are seeing this as another thing they need to comply with. There is what we're calling a maelstrom of regulation in this ESG space, and this is yet another thing that they need to try and comply with. But what we're trying to do is not scaremonger businesses. This is all doable, and businesses should be really thinking about how this is best practice. And actually, if they can comply with the directive, this is like to be the gold standard. And therefore, if they can meet those standards, they're likely to be ahead of the game in terms of other regulation, whether that is, for example, you know, the EU Batteries Directive or other requirements in the context of environmental regulation.
Like lots of countries, the UK has said it wants to be a leader in the development and use of autonomous vehicles. It took a big step forward last month when it passed a law that will govern how self-driving cars can be used and who's to blame when incidents happen. It's not the first self-driving car law in the world, but it is an early one, and it meets some of the legislative challenges head-on, defining lots of terms that will be crucial in regulating their use and assigning liability when things go wrong. Concepts such as what autonomous means and what safe means for self-driving cars. Birmingham-based automotive law expert Leo Parkington outlined, first of all, what the new law does.
The legislation is probably the first major step in towards having automated vehicles on our roads. The government wants to do that by 2026. The main thing to understand is it's really a framework. So it sets out core concepts and principles against which the Department for Transport now has to sort of pass a huge array of secondary legislation and regulations that sort of fill in the details. The key thing it does is it sets up an authorization regime for the Department of Transport to it introduces a number of sort of core concepts. So what is an autonomous vehicle? What does safe look like on our roads? All these kind of difficult questions have been answered in the legislation. And the most interesting section probably for most people will be the fact that it establishes and sets out a sort of criminal liability regime for autonomous vehicles. And for the first time sort of puts some liability on autonomous technology on UK roads.
There are two big questions a self-driving car law needs to address. Firstly, what's meant by self-driving? Given the many ways in which these machines can be used, when exactly is a person in control and when is a machine in control? And secondly, based on that, who is to blame when things go wrong? The new law, which applies in Scotland, Wales and England, but not Northern Ireland, doesn't shrink from those questions.
The liability picture, if we imagine there's been a crash or there's been some sort of traffic infraction or breach of some sort of road traffic act in the UK, the first question that the legislation would ask is whether it's a user in charge or a no user in charge journey. And what that means is essentially, is there someone in the vehicle to take control if necessary? If it's a no user in charge journey, then that's fairly simple. That means there is no one in the car and then the autonomous vehicle is sort of by default going to be liable for whatever might have occurred. If it's a user in charge journey, then the position is a little bit more nuanced. So the question is whether the user in charge was in control. Someone that's in charge of a vehicle may not be in control of it because the autonomous technology might be in control. And the legislation introduces some sort of new concepts in relation to this for the first time. So one of the key concepts is what's called a transition demand. And that is where the autonomous vehicle issues a demand for the person in the vehicle to take control within a certain amount of time. And then after an accident has occurred or a breach of traffic laws has occurred, what will be really important is the data in the vehicle, which will be able to tell you who was in control, whether transition demand had been issued, whether it had been answered, and essentially who is liable for whatever has occurred.
So the people making the systems will be liable for risks up to and including deaths caused on the road if it's a no user in charge situation. This has huge implications for two kinds of companies in particular, companies that make the vehicles and companies that make the self-driving systems. So how will they work out which of them carries that liability?
Car makers or the tech companies that they team up with will be liable for criminal liability for, yeah, potentially, in the worst case scenario, sort of deaths on the road. The legislation sets out a principle of authorised self-driving entity, and that is the entity that the person, the regulated body putting this vehicle on the road, says is liable. So in practice, that might be your car maker, your OEM, but it might also be your tech company that they've teamed up with that is responsible for the autonomous technology. I anticipate that they will have numerous indemnities and deals between themselves to sort of apportion that risk in the background. But for the purposes of whoever has been sort of the unfortunate victim of a traffic infraction, then yeah, that authorised self-driving entity will be the sort of party initially responsible.
Leo says the UK is genuinely taking a legislative lead here, and that being early means that the standards set out in this law will be likely to have influence on laws all around the world.
So the government is really committed to making the UK sort of one of the hubs for this technology. And as a result, we are fairly early in passing these kind of laws, and certainly of this comprehensive piece of legislation. This is probably one of the more comprehensive frameworks that are in the world right now. There's certainly some cool concepts in here. You know, it sets out the definition of what autonomous means. It sets out the different definition of what safe means. And those concepts might be copied from other country by other countries. Generally, the detail is still yet to come in the regulations and secondary legislation that needs to be passed. So it's probably a bit early to say if the framework all fits together perfectly yet. But yeah, there's certainly some cool concepts in there that are useful and innovative.
UK government department, the Department for Transport, has to fill in a lot of blanks here. The law is just a framework and can't work without a lot of regulation being developed, consulted on and adopted, which will happen over the next 2 years. So Leo said we shouldn't expect roads to be suddenly flooded with fully autonomous vehicles as soon as the law passes in 2026.
At the moment, we have the sort of core concepts of the legislation. What does safe mean? What is an autonomous vehicle? In the next 2 years, the Department of Transport will be really setting that out in more detail and sort of setting out the authorisation regime and starting to actually authorise autonomous features for cars on UK roads. It will probably be a few years until we actually start to see those. And that will be sort of when you really see these cars effectively driving themselves, probably with someone in the front seat, but someone in the front seat not necessarily with their hands on the wheel, taking as much focus as you might see now in sort of a Tesla or sort of a vehicle that sort of does currently have some automated features at the lower level.
Thanks for listening to the Pinsent Masons podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you find time to share it with colleagues and friends, and to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget, if you sign up at pinsentmasons.com/newsletter, you can get a tailored weekly digest of the most important business, law, news and analysis every week. Thanks for spending time with us, and until next time, goodbye. The Pinsent Masons podcast was produced by Matthew McGee for international professional services firm Pinsent Masons.